For those listening to KSBN Money Talk Radio who might be interested in buying physical precious metals for less than what I can pay for them, stay tuned. I have a way you can support this show and secure what I believe is the best price for precious metals on the existing market. In our first commercial break, I will explain this in more detail. And now, let's get on with Reclaiming the Republic. Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This is G.R. Mobley. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. If you go to ReclaimingTheRepublic.org, you can download our podcast and support documents and links. This is an educational, grassroots program designed to restore the Republic and placing the general government, or what many refer to as the federal government, back into the constitutional framework and scope of the Constitution. Well, as I typically go into the toll-free number, let me first thank you, the listeners. We are growing, and especially, I didn't mention this last week, and I wanted to. Three listeners actually pulled the trigger in contacting my broker and buying some precious metal. So I thank you for doing that. And obviously, the prices were very good in the past week and a half or so. So I know that it's commodities, and they go up and down. So you buy low, sell high, I believe, is the adage. For most people, and maybe in this area, a lot of people would just be actually buying to hold and not necessarily buying as an investment to sell. Our toll-free number to call in is 844-320-4299. So if you have the compunction to call and ask a question or need some clarification or just want to tell me why you hate the Constitution, by all means, just give us a call. If you can't listen to this show or this entire show today, then you can always listen to it on Saturdays at 1 o'clock because KSBN rebroadcasts this show at 1 o'clock on Saturdays. And that's 1 p.m., not 1 a.m. Many parts of these shows refer to previous shows, and these shows build off of each other. Consequently, to stay abreast with all the content, you need to listen to all of these shows. That way you can garner what Republic Review is and how we and you can assist in reclaiming the Republic. So don't forget to download these shows off of ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. In local announcements, the Spokane County GOP Lincoln Day Dinner is on June 3rd. It's a couple of weeks away. And I believe if you do not get your tickets before Monday, prices will be going up. And so make sure you get your tickets so you get the cheaper costs if you want to save a little money. You know, there's nothing wrong with being penny wise. And their keynote speaker is Tomi Loren. A few seats are available. Last time I checked, there were a few seats available at the main table and some premium seats and so forth. And then the general seats out there are going for about $86 on the Eventbrite website. So hurry and get your tickets while they last. There is a Republican Coffee Club that meets 7 o'clock. And this Friday, they will be having the candidates running for city council, Tim Benn, Jenny Graham, and Tony Keepy. And I believe Jenny Graham is no longer running. I believe I saw an update that there's this the actual candidate instead of Jenny, will be speaking. And on the second, which is going to be a very interesting topic, Aaron Tilbury will be speaking about the Jonah Project. And if you've heard about that, this is how local people and nationally people are working to help the victims of the sex trafficking industry. I remember listening to, I think it was Glenn Beck that traveled to Thailand where he was working this. And it was just like, it's amazing just how horrible these things are, you know, coming up and just how evil we've, you know, recessed and debased as a society, as a world, and even as a culture here in America. Anyway, the admission is $5, and the venue is at the Bangkok Thai restaurant inside the No Lie Brewery out on Trent and Hamilton. And that $5 will get you in, and it'll get you a cup of coffee and a donut. So it's worth going if you want to listen to some of these candidates and some of these interesting topics. I've also mentioned for a couple of weeks now to save the date. On Saturday, June 24th, from 2 to 4, there will be a Spirit of America rally. And I'm hoping to maybe see if we can work out a remote. I just need to get the equipment and so forth, so I'm not promising anything. But if we can do a remote, then we will actually, you know, broadcast what's happening, or a portion of what's happening at the Spirit of America rally. And this is going to be over in North Idaho, and so make sure you save that date, and more information will be coming in the weeks to come. On June 3rd and 4th, at the Kootenai Fairgrounds in Coeur d'Alene, North Idaho Mineral Club will be having their annual show. And again, there's some pretty neat artifacts that you can go and take a look at and even purchase, such as fossils and raw gemstones and so forth. It's a fascinating world, what's under the ground. So here's an important question that I posed last week, and I'm looking for some dialogue on. If you feel like religious freedom is a constitutional right, then by all means, you know, give me a call, and that number is 844-320-4299. And if you do call and we don't pick up, it's just learning, growing pains and learning processes, and we're all about process improvement. So we should hear the phone and we should be able to pick up, but by all means, just call back if we don't. So anywho, the question is, do we have carte blanche religious freedom guaranteed by the Constitution? And I'm just surprised in putting it into context of the history and what the Constitution was designed to do. I'm just surprised what people really believe today compared to what the framers had intended. So by all means, let's have the dialogue on religious freedom and whether we, you know, have a right to it and or what that means in the freedom of religious expression. As I mentioned last week, it's National Electric Safety Month. So if you're looking for a home backup generator solution, or getting a proposal on what you need to do and or the costs and so forth, call ACI Northwest at 1-800-767-3027. Or you can find them on acinw.com. So getting into this week's content of historical, constitutional, relevant topics before I get into the Federalist Papers, I can't say I'm ever surprised by the behavior of lawless leaders. And this is what you get when you elect a secular progressive. They have no morals, no compunction. I don't care whether they sit in a church or not, they will do whatever they have to do to further their cause. They basically practice the arts and the concepts of deceit, and use propaganda, use literally deceit and lies to further their cause. It is a means to an end, and they have no problem with fooling you, stealing from you, and doing these things. So when you heard in the news that we were being spied on, and that our president, who took an oath, who violated his oath to uphold the laws of this land, and did the things that he's done, letting out people that were knowingly harmful, actually allowing people that were knowingly harmful into this country in the first place, and putting them back on the streets and so forth. Are you surprised? Do you really believe that, you know, his concerns are the upholding the Constitution? Do you believe his concerns were protecting you, which is the primary object of government, is to protecting your life and property? No. It's all about the end goal of being able to collapse our system and being able to move us into a communist form of system to where we become slaves to the state. That's what they want to do, is enslave us in subjugation. Well, so we're coming up on the end of this break or segment, so we're going into our first break. So please stay tuned, and we will be right back after these sponsors, and please support our sponsors and stay tuned. Thank you. So there's no doubt, and just closing on the topic of lawless leaders, these leaders such as Obama, Pelosi, and these people that have been scrupulous in how they have acted as our elected officials, they should be tried. And if found guilty, they should be punished to the full extent of the law for treason and what have you. Just please read the Constitution regarding treason. States can actually charge people for treason. It can be tried in the federal courts or by the federal government, by Congress or whomever, but anybody within the states, or I should say the state attorney generals and so forth, can actually charge somebody for treason. So wouldn't it be interesting if some constitutional states started charging these people and issuing warrants? I'll bet you Pelosi would never go to those states. I'll bet you Obama would, and the Clintons, they'd probably stay out of those states. Anyway, I don't know what it means to be a conservative anymore, because by definition, a conservative is somebody that wants to keep things the way they are. And I can understand, before we really started taking these steep slides into socialism from the Johnson administration and moving into, you know, the Great Society and these social engineering programs and so forth, I can understand before that wanting to kind of conserve what you had, even if you didn't really understand that what a lot of the government was doing was still a violation of the Constitution. I can understand conservatism at that point as far as government goes. I can also understand conservative values of being moral, ethical, being, you know, chaste, those types of things. I understand that. But being a conservative in political space anymore, I don't understand. You want to conserve this the way it is? Because by definition, that's what that means. And so I think that maybe conservatives should maybe take on a new approach, make up a new name. You know, that's what the progressives do. They were called communists, and they were called socialists, and then industrial Democrats, and so forth, and now they're just Democrats. But in conservatism, maybe it should be restitutionalists, or, you know, if there's such a word, or restorers, or originalists, or something that really aligns to what your end goal should be politically, getting back to the constitutional values and the Constitution that was instituted by the framers and by the Republic. Unfortunately, a lot of people don't understand that, thus this program in reclaiming the Republic. I know that we've lost a conservative icon this past week when Rogers Ailes passed away. And I know he was a champion for conservatism, but in no way was he a champion for reclaiming the Republic and peeling back all this unconstitutional power and so forth. I do believe that there are lots of people that, you know, fit in with the big conservative, like Roger Ailes, the Koch brothers, and so forth, that, you know, want to kind of, you know, fix things a little bit, but not completely. You see, there are a lot of conservatives who simply want to keep things the way they are, and what this means is they want to maintain a large national government, but they don't want it to continue to slide into socialism and maybe dial back some of the socialistic programs and policies. All told, this means that they're okay with the fact that the federal government is violating the Constitution. The fact is that big corporations rely on government for protection and use regulations to keep competition at bay. the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, and many other regulations like the ADA kills small businesses. The ADA, for example, when it went out and said you had to have handicap access to these ma and pas that lived in archaic old buildings downtown, and there's just no way they could afford to do all the retrofitting to put in, you know, a wheelchair ramp and all these other things. But most of those people were so good that they would have been very accommodating to do anything and everything they possibly could for somebody in that situation. But it didn't matter because there were these progressive lawyers that went around and sued ma and pa and shut them down. And that's why many stores, storefronts, and buildings within these cities are, you know, in blight or basically vacant and or not inhabitable by businesses and so forth, because they can't be changed without a large price, because they don't have the capital to pay for that. But these large corporations, they have more than enough capital to put in an elevator, to put in an escalator, to put in a ramp or automatic doors or what have you. That type of stuff is chump change because they're public, you know, like Walmart. It's a public traded company that makes billions of dollars a year. And, you know, spending a little bit of money to make it accessible for a new disability or what have you, there you go. It's no problem. But you look at some of these stores downtown in Spokane or in your city where you live in California or out in Florida, Oklahoma, Missouri. Go ahead, go through the downtown and look at some of those shops and go, there is just no way that that could be conformed to those standards. That's why it's going to either exist the way it is or it will be vacant the way it is, because they can't accommodate those types of changes because nobody wants and nobody has that kind of capital to make that kind of investment. They just want to be partakers of the American dream and have an idea and sell it to you. But instead, because all these regulations, which, you know, technically are unconstitutional, even though the ADA Act falls under the federal government not being able to discriminate, those types of constitutional amendments need to be checked and need to actually be measured against what is their intent. Is their intent to destroy the ability for people to start up a small business downtown? Let's say you got a great idea for a comic store and, you know, okay, the business space that you can afford can't accommodate. Well, you should be sued. You shouldn't be able to have a business. And then you not only lose all of your investment, but maybe even your personal property as well. That shouldn't be happening. Anyway, getting back to Ailes, in Ailes' case, he had no real competition imposing an opposing view to the secular progressive mainstream media. So he was a real champion in presenting the alternate news for a long time. Well, until the explosion of the internet and social media, and now we're just being flooded with fake news and real news and all points in between. Unfortunately, Roger Ailes died with his world crashing down on him, and I don't wish that upon anybody. I think he was a good man. I think he wanted to do good things. Remember when I started this show, and I don't say this enough, reasonable people, equally informed, seldom disagree. And I believe if Roger Ailes was equally informed and understanding what's wrong, why things are going the way they are, and what we could do about it in fixing the Constitution, I believe he would be on board with promoting more of these constitutionalist positions and trying to help fight secular progressives and the slide into socialism and unconstitutional government or federal tyranny, what have you. Apparently, we live in a society that we have to treat people as if they are guilty of something before they can be proved innocent in the court of law. And in some cases, it may be very hard to do that, to prove yourself innocent, because you're just fighting rumors and hearsay. In a similar fashion, Bill Cosby's conservative causes, because he became a real champion in trying to help black communities and becoming a black leader in trying to get people to say, hey, look, we gotta fix our homes, we gotta fix our families. And instead, within a short period of time after he started standing up. Because I remember, I forget the occasion, I believe it was the anniversary of the Martin Luther King I Have a Dream speech, where Bill Cosby actually debated, I believe it was Jesse Jackson, and, you know, called him out for, you know, everything you're doing is destroying our communities. We need to get back to real Black American principles that we had, and being proud in not taking government handouts and being self-sufficient instead of being enslaved by government. Anyway, coming up on another break, stay tuned. I will finish this thought on Ailes and Cosby, and we'll get into some other constitutional matters like the Federalist Papers. So stay tuned. We'll be right back. Okay, so we're back. I was just talking about Bill Cosby and how the horrific things that are being alleged. And so this has to go through the process, the due process of a trial. So let's let that happen. And I believe, this is, he's being pummeled in the press. And I find it interesting that as Bill Cosby became a real champion in challenging the left paradigm and demanding the Black communities take back their families and hold some values instead of blaming others, I find it interesting that all of a sudden, slowly, you know, these allegations started coming back. And so I believe that there's some connection. I mean, things that there's never really just a coincidence. You know, accidents happen, but I just don't think that these are coincidence. So sometimes if you're going to be a champion, especially against the progressives, you can't have that type of ghosts or bones in the closet. A lot of times you may not even have those ghosts or bones in the closet. You're just going to be pummeled with a bunch of allegations because they know they can continue to do this. And it's the same thing with lawyers going after doctors just for malpractice and so forth. The retort reform, and there's been a lot of people that have been championing, hey, if you're going to sue somebody and you lose, you got to pay the costs. And there's merit in all of that. And right now there are no consequences for besmirching and basically discrediting somebody and making them go through the agony and the humility of going through court and so forth. But in other words, it took a few years after he debated Jesse Jackson and making a fool out of him, as I was recalling. But it's interesting how, you know, it hasn't made any changes on the community, and these allegations are just, you know, moving forward. With regard to Ailes, I just hope that somebody can replace him and, you know, fill his shoes, because he did have big shoes. And I hope that Fox can become a greater champion of reclaiming the Republic and not just opposing alternate views to the secular progressive news and slant of what's going on in news and journalism. Moving into constitutional matters, let's see what states have ignored their constitutional birthdays recently. Maryland, on the 28th of April, did nothing to recognize their constitutional birthday when they ratified the Constitution. Louisiana, on the 30th of April, instead of celebrating their partakers of being a stakeholder in the Constitution, I think they were just kind of planning on dismantling the Confederacy history and story and changing the narrative of our history. Minnesota, on the 11th of May, 1788, they became a partaker of this constitutional republic and a stakeholder in that constitution or that contract. They did nothing. Even the constitution parties in these states, as I ping these people, and, hey, what did you guys do for, you know, I just don't tell them, hey, did you celebrate your birthday? I ask them, what did you do for May 11th? What did you do for the 30th of April? And nothing. They did nothing. They don't recognize their states, you know, becoming a part of this beautiful contract. And I think that's just pathetic. Washington's is November 11th. And I would like to see local leaders and local groups organize something to basically recognize that we as a state became a stakeholder, a part owner in this contract known as the Constitution. Three other states, South Carolina on the 23rd of May this week, and looking forward, Rhode Island will probably do nothing. And I'm just being a prognosticator here. Wisconsin will do nothing as well. And so I will ping them and Constitution Party leaders and other conservatives in these states and go, what did you do on this particular date? And I'll bet you they did nothing. They did not recognize the importance and the magnitude of being that part owner of the Constitution. And that's sad. And that's why we need to raise constitutional awareness of, you know, who we are as states. What are we? We're the owners of that contract. Anyway, as I want to put out another reminder that I do have this book giveaway to a caller that can talk about what are the constitutional guarantees of the freedom of religion. And so that phone number again is 844-320-4299. If you have an opinion on this or you just want to discuss this, because I've discussed this in the past, then by all means, who knows? I could be wrong. I, you know, can cite a lot of historical facts and data, but I could be wrong. But let's move on. If you have the compunction, though, just go ahead and give us a call. And that number again is 844-320-4299. Now, before I read my first Federalist Paper citation, I have to ask this question. Are the words in these founding documents that I'm citing here right now, which were clearly documented, are these the words of deceit? Or are the words that we have been taught from our progressive education system, the progressive colleges and professors, lawyers, politicians, and bureaucrats, the words of deceit? I want you to compare and contrast what you're being told in these Federalist Papers and what we're hearing within the progressive education system and amongst our politicians and so forth. And that way you'll know in this comparing and contrasting, that you will be able to discern which is the truth. Because I don't think the framers had any intent or any reason to lie. I have asserted that I believe Hamilton understood loops, or I should say loopholes and or back doors in some things. And I think he put out ruses and maybe red herrings or straw man arguments in some of his Federalist Papers, because you could see later on after the Federalist Papers, he started arguing precisely those things that he said wouldn't exist. So anyway, let's get into the first Federalist Paper. But before I do, the last time I read, last week, the Federalist Paper I read was Federalist Paper 85, Alexander Hamilton, paragraph 13. And this article 85 does cover the Constitutional Convention and the process of states overseeing the Constitution and so forth. But the key point I wanted to point out that Hamilton was saying, and I will quote again, we should safely rely on the disposition of state legislatures to erect barriers against the encroachments of the national authority. And so where are those? Let's look at the first 13 colonies, or the first 13 states, and let's say, where are your legislative barriers as far as the state goes in keeping the federal government from encroaching? Well, so they didn't have that threat. That threat didn't really start occurring until much later, 25 years, 50 years later, 50 years after the Revolution is when Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died. Right? It was 1825, July 4th. And so if you look at, or 1826, I think it was 50 years after the Declaration of Independence, anyway, if you look at, you know, the history and how slow this process was, that the federal government started growing and growing and filling in its voids, just like gas in a in any type of a container, it just fills the void. What ended up happening is it started seeping out, and the states by that time did not understand, and the power base within the state legislatures and the politicians and so forth didn't know. They weren't partakers of the ratification debates. They weren't partakers of the concerns over this federal government. This federal government seemed innocuous. Hey, it's everything was going great. And when you get a federal judge like John Marshall saying, hey, we can be supreme in anything we want to be, then that's what you get. You're going to get them to basically get you by soothsaying, by lying to you, saying that we can do these things when clearly they can't. And it was clearly documented that they couldn't. And it didn't stop them from saying, yeah, we can and we will, because it's necessary and proper and we're going to do these things. And, you know, well, what can you do? You can't challenge the Supreme Court. Actually, you can. The states have the authority to challenge anything that the federal government does, as I've said in many of the other Federalist Papers. So the next Federalist Paper that I want to get into, because it talks about property, and we're starting to, you know, see property becoming a big issue in just normal conversations. And so I hear the music for a break coming up, so I'll hold on to Federalist Paper number 10 for when we get back. So please stay tuned, and we'll get into what Madison says about property here. We'll be right back. Okay, so we're on the last leg, and I'm going to try to get through a few Federalist Papers. So let me read through, and I'll try to editorialize on what Madison, Hamilton, or Jay said. And in this case, it's Federalist Paper number 10, and it's Madison talking, and this is paragraph 7. The diversity in the faculties of men from which the rights of property originate is not less an insuperable obstacle to a uniformity of interest. The protection of these faculties is the first object of government. I repeat that. The protection of these objects, properties, is the first object of government. From the protection of the different and unequal faculties of acquiring property, the possession of different degrees of kinds of property immediately results, and from the influence of these on the sentiments and the views of the respective proprietors ensues a division of the society into different interests and parties. The haves and the have-nots are two different interests within society. And they want what you have because they're not willing to work as hard as you did to get that. And so what they do is they use government to do that. But in, as he clearly states, it is government's first object is to protect your property. The property rights, as some historians will tell you, goes all the way back to Roman law, because it was the first time these historians, again, this is secular progressive view and revisionists of history, basically said that property first became several or legally binding in the Roman law. That's not true. Actually, if you go all the way back to when Israel left Egypt and Moses went up on the mount, one of the commandments was, thou shalt not steal, which means that if it's not your property, you can't have it. And so everybody knows whose property is what. And they may not have had titles, and they may not have had a mature, you know, registration process of properties, you know, of real properties and that types of deeds. Of course they didn't have that then. You know, we've only matured because of, you know, learning through people stealing and what have you by, you know, counterfeit or whatever. We've matured our processes and made improvements in protecting your property. But it is pure thuggery when the government takes your property to give to someone else, whether that property be via your income and compensation for your labor, or whether it be physical real property, whether it be vehicle or what have you. It is theft. And so government should never be the thieves and the thugs. They're supposed to protect all people's properties. The next Federalist paper that I have is Federalist paper number one, and it's Hamilton, and this is paragraph five. It will be equally forgotten that the vigor of government is essential in the security of liberty, that in the contemplation of a sound and well-informed judgment, their interest can never be separated, and that a dangerous ambition often lurks behind the specious mask of zeal for the rights of the people, then under the forbidden appearance of zeal for the firmness and efficiency of government. History will teach us that the former, which is the zeal for the rights of the people, rather than the latter, the dangerous ambition the zeal for the firmness and efficiency. So in other words, people wanting to have their rights over the efficiency of government, in other words, maintaining the laws and protecting property and those types of things. When people want equal rights, so, you know, we all have to have a fair wage. We all have to have a living wage so that we can all, you know, acquire the same things equally. Well, that comes at a cost, and that comes at a huge cost, whether that be by taxation or whether that be by destroying companies and so forth, by creating a tax on employers to force them to pay wages that are beyond the, you know, education and the performance level of the tasks. And that's Marxism, by the way. Marxism basically put all labor as equal. Marx believed that the guy pushing the broom was the same as the brain surgeon, or the guy that is, you know, watching cars come in and out of a gate, you know, at a movie studio. His labor is equal to the actor making millions of dollars. That's Marx's theory. Adam Smith's theory was completely opposite of that, that all labor is unequal, that each person has a uniqueness, and through their innovation, application of education, to developing and skills and so forth, they can seek to gain a better form of compensation so that they can develop wealth. In other words, if I can do better than this guy, I should be paid more than that guy. And that's the whole point of a free market. And so what Hamilton was saying here is that the zeal of the people wanting their rights can easily overcome. And that's what we've been dealing with. Marxism has been overcoming our rule of laws in constraining government, in not applying social engineering, but in keeping them to protecting all people equally, because all people have some type of property. All people have some forms of property rights and so forth, and the ability to access and or acquire those. But when it comes to making social justice or equality of property for people, that is injustice. It is immoral when government compels people to basically give to others by coming in and taxing you and then giving that to somebody else. What government should be doing is incentivizing people and saying, well, you know, whether that be through education or what have you, to get them on a path of self-sufficiency. The question is really, is that government's job? No, that's actually the community. But if you look at local community, it is a form of government. Local community should be very engaged in working with the people and those who are in need, in plight, and saying, okay, well, we don't have a studio here, so you can't be a YouTube director, but we have coal mines, we have lumber, so we can get you into the, you know, mining trade, we can get you into the lumbering trade, and we can teach you to become a productive person in society. Or you can move to Hollywood and, you know, try to become that, you know, breakthrough director that you want to be, because there's lots of kids going to the schools and getting into debt over those types of careers. But It's fascinating why, you know, we even pay for those types of things when there's not even enough jobs for that. But anyway, this alludes to the danger of democracy. This alludes to the threat of allowing people to demand for those types of things. And the interesting fact is the Constitution didn't allow for this. The Constitution does not allow for this. The Constitution constrains government from being able to do this. Justice is supposed to be blind. And the federal government is supposed to be indifferent when it comes to who has what and who does what. They are just to ensure that your freedoms, they don't encumber. They do not restrict your speech, your religious expression, that they do not encumber your rights of assembly, your rights to bear arms, you know, the Bill of Rights. They're not supposed to be stepping into your world and making life hard for you. They're just supposed to make laws to protect your property rights and protect your ability to be productive and active in society. Aristotle, in Politics, asserted this very, very clearly, and when he talks about how people are being used as pawns by demagoguery for, you know, taking from these people to the others. These have been played out for centuries, millennia. It's the end of the show. Thank you for tuning in. We'll be back next week. Stay tuned, and God bless.